Hello everyone and welcome back to A Few Minutes of History. Now for those of you that don't follow my YouTube channel, firstly, why not? I'll link it below so you can subscribe to it. But secondly, it means you haven't seen my latest series of videos on Medal of Honor and Victoria Cross recipients. So what I thought I would do today is combine all of these stories into one long episode. There are four stories in today's episode, totaling around 20 minutes or so. So why not strap yourselves in and listen to some insanely brave men doing some extraordinary things in the line of duty. Thank you all for your continued support. We are actually starting to chart now in several countries, so that is fantastic. Anyway, enough of that. Here is today's episode. Enjoy. In today's episode, we shall be talking about a Medal of Honor winner whose bravery on this day in 1945 was the absolute definition of selflessness. John Harlan Willis was born on the 10th of June 1921 in Columbia, Tennessee. Following his graduation from high school, he enlisted in the United States Navy in November 1940. He received initial recruit training at the Naval Training Station, Norfolk, Virginia, before moving to the Norfolk Naval Hospital in Virginia to train as a hospital corpsman. When America came into the war in December 1941, Willis served with the Naval Operating Base Units. These would organize and train units for overseas service. In early 1944, however, he moved to the 3rd Battalion, 27th Marines, 5th Marine Division at Camp Pendleton, California, where he joined a rifle company as a corpsman. In late December 1944, the unit left the States and headed towards the island of Iwo Jima. There, the men would be part of the invasion force that aimed to take control of the island from Japan. The Japanese had reinforced the island with over 10 miles of tunnels, and cave entrances were heavily fortified. The Japanese had created intertwining machine gun and artillery nests that were positioned to help create the maximum devastation when the Marines invaded the island. They also created hundreds of holes, which were large enough for only a single soldier, that were dug into the volcanic terrain, which would allow that lone soldier to spring out and attack unsuspecting patrols from behind. The Japanese also constructed hundreds of pillboxes and bunkers that were reinforced with thick steel, as well as heaps of sand that absorbed the shock waves of potentially devastating American naval fire. The Marines endured a difficult first day on Iwo Jima, with more than 2,500 Marines killed or wounded. Among those killed early in the action was Gunnery Sergeant John Bazalone, who himself was a recipient of the Medal of Honor for his incredible heroism on Guadalcanal. I've linked the video I put out on him below in the comments. The Japanese had also begun utilizing a devastating tactic. Those that could speak English would shout, "Corpsman!" in the hope that in the chaos, they could lure an unsuspected medic towards them, kill them, and devastate unit morale. Willis's unit had made their way inland towards Hill 362, and in the fighting, several Marines had become wounded. Willis began to make his way forward and began providing first aid to the Marines who needed it, until he himself was struck by shrapnel and wounded. He was then evacuated back to the aid station, where he had his wounds patched up. He then discharged himself against orders and returned to his men. He found the Marines engaged in bloody fighting when the Japanese launched a counterattack on their position. The fighting quickly turned into violent hand-to-hand fighting. Willis saw one of the Marines had been wounded on the very edge of the American front line in a shell hole. He bravely made his way through mortar, machine gun and sniper fire to get to the man. Willis then began giving the man first aid for his wounds. The man's wounds were so bad that Willis had to give the man blood plasma that he desperately needed. Suddenly, a Japanese grenade landed in the shell hole. Willis threw it back towards the Japanese and took cover. The Japanese then kept hammering his position, and seven more grenades were thrown into Willis's position. Every one he threw back, all while treating his casualty. Sadly, a ninth grenade was launched into the hole, and when Willis picked it up to throw it back, it exploded, killing him instantly. He was just 23 years old. For this incredible act of bravery under intense enemy fire, John Harlan Willis was awarded the Medal of Honor. After the war, the USS John Willis, a US Navy destroyer escort, was named in his honor. The Americans eventually captured Iwo Jima after weeks of brutal fighting. 27 men were awarded the Medal of Honor in the battle, five of whom were Navy sailors, and of these five, four were corpsmen. Well, that concludes today's episode. Hope you all enjoyed it. Thank you all for watching, and we'll see you very soon. Cheery bye. That was episode one in the series on Medal of Honor and Victoria Cross recipients. I hope you all enjoyed that one. The next one will start right now. The Second World War saw incredible acts of bravery. Men on all sides performed heroic deeds and earned their respective country's highest honours. And in today's episode, I shall be talking about one of these men. Maynard Harrison Smith was born in Michigan in 1911. He lived a comfortable life as a child with his parents in affluent jobs. He, however, developed a reputation for being somewhat of a misfit and a troublemaker who didn't get along well with others, and he was sent to Howe Military Academy in Indiana in an attempt to straighten him out. After graduating, he got a job with the U.S. Tax Department. But when his father died in 1934, he left his son a sizable inheritance. So Smith quit his job and lived off his father's money. During this time, he had a child and married twice, the second of which ended in 1942. Shortly after this, Smith enlisted in the army. Supposedly, a judge forced his hand by telling Smith that if he didn't enlist in the army, he'd be sent to jail for failure to pay tax support, although this has never been certified. After completing basic training, he volunteered for aerial gunnery school. At the time, all aerial gunners were non-commissioned officers, and Smith hated taking orders from men younger than himself. Becoming an NCO meant better pay and better conditions. He completed his training in Harlingen, Texas, and in April 1943, he was sent as a replacement gunner to the 423rd Bombardment Squadron of the 8th Air Force's 306th Bomb Group in Thurley, England. Smith was somewhat short in stature, standing around 5'6", and he quickly gained a reputation as a stubborn and obnoxious airman. He did not get on well with the other airmen stationed at the base. He soon earned the nickname Snuffy Smith, and his personality and lack of military bearing meant that he was seen as undesirable to join many bomb crews who saw their B-17s and their crews as family. But eventually, due to high casualty rates, Smith saw himself join a crew as a ball turret gunner. Smith flew his first mission on May 1, 1943. He joined a B-17 filled with combat veterans. Its pilot was flying his 25th and final mission, and many of the other crew members had high mission numbers too. The target of their mission was the German U-boat pens at Saint-Nazaire on the French coast. The location had been nicknamed Flak City by Allied airmen because of the heavy German anti-aircraft defences that had been erected there. The mission started badly. Several of the bombers had failed to rendezvous as intended, and a few others had serious mechanical problems and had to turn back to England or risk facing a major problem over France. The middle portion of the bomber mission went well, however, with no German fighters engaging the B-17s until after they had released their bomb loads on the target. As the enemy fighters came at the bombers, the Americans used evasive tactics to elude them by flying into large cloud banks. This, however, did cause a problem. The lead plane's navigator made an error, and the planes had accidentally turned too early, and instead of flying over the English coast, the planes instead flew back over the French coast at the city of Brest, and unfortunately for them, straight back into the fight. The Germans hit the bombers with anti-aircraft batteries, coastal artillery, and heavy machine gun fire, and some of the B-17s took hits and went down. Smith's plane took heavy fire from below, and one of the fuel tanks was ruptured, causing a huge fire to break out inside the plane. The flames were intensified by oxygen that had escaped from the damaged oxygen system that had also been hit in the attack. Smith's ball turret had lost all power, and he had to crank it manually to escape. When he emerged from the turret, he was confronted with a scene of absolute chaos. Everything, it seemed, was on fire, and huge holes had been ripped in the fuselage by flak fire. Two of the crew members were seriously wounded, and three others bailed out in the carnage, preferring to take their chances in the sea rather than the burning plane. For the next 90 minutes, Smith fought the blazing inferno with extinguishers, water bottles, and even resorted to urinating on the flames. But the fire continued to spread, and the flames were getting so intense in some areas of the plane that ammunition was starting to explode. Smith then realized he had another task to take on single-handedly, tossed the burning ammunition boxes overboard before they exploded and brought the plane down. Incredibly, between all of this, Smith then manned the plane's waste machine guns, fighting off German fighters until they gave up. He flicked between helping his wounded colleagues, fighting the fire, and using the plane's 50 caliber machine guns. The pilots had also survived the carnage and landed the almost destroyed bomber back in England. A few minutes after landing, the B-17, riddled with over 3,500 bullet holes and held together by the frames of the plane, fully broke in half. The three crew members who bailed out were never seen again and were presumed lost at sea. But Smith's efforts undoubtedly saved the lives of the other crew members aboard his aircraft. For his immense courage, Maynard Harrison Smith was awarded the Medal of Honor, becoming the first enlisted airman of the US Army Air Force to receive this distinction. The award ceremony has a hilarious story attached to it. Henry L. Stimson, the Secretary of War, had been dispatched to England, and while on his trip, he was to present Smith with his Medal of Honor. All the trimmings had been put out, a flypast had been organized, and reporters were there to cover the event, as well as generals and, of course, the Secretary of War. One small problem arose, however. Maynard Harrison Smith was nowhere to be found. A search party was organized, and Smith was eventually located, in the kitchen, on punishment. America's newest hero had been late to one too many briefings and was subsequently put on punishment. After a quick change, he was eventually presented the Medal of Honor. Smith went on to fly four more combat missions before being grounded for combat stress. He was then assigned to clerical work, which he was less than adequate at, and his performance led to him being demoted to the rank of private. Shortly before the close of the Second World War, he was sent home and discharged from the army. He married his third wife, and with whom he had four children. Maynard Harrison Smith died in 1984, aged 72. He is buried in Arlington National Cemetery. Well, that concludes today's video. Hope you all enjoyed it. Don't forget to hit like and subscribe. Thank you all for watching, and we'll see you on the next one. Well, that was episode 2 done. Hope you all enjoyed that one. Now we move to Operation Market Garden, and a man who is quickly becoming one of my favourite in history, Major Robert Kane. Today's episode is a real cracker and continues on my theme of medal winners. Operation Market Garden was, as many of you know, supposed to end the war by Christmas 1944. The ambitious plan created by Field Marshal Montgomery involved dropping 3 airborne divisions into occupied Holland. These divisions would capture and hold a series of bridges so that 30 Corps could push up the road and open up a new front straight into the heart of Germany. But in today's episode, I shall not be talking about Operation Market Garden as an operation. I shall be talking about one man and his heroics that saw him awarded Britain's highest award, the Victoria Cross. Robert Henry Kane was born January 1909 in Shanghai, China. His parents were originally from the Isle of Man and soon returned home, and Kane grew up on the island and was educated at King William's College. After finishing school and college, he began working for Shell. He worked in Thailand and Malaya during his career. In between this, he joined the Honourable Artillery Company in the Territorial Army, which in modern times is the Army Reserve. When the Second World War began, Kane initially wasn't called up, but in 1940, he was given an emergency commission as a second lieutenant and joined the Royal Northumberland Fusiliers. In 1942, he was seconded to the 2nd Battalion, the South Staffordshire Regiment, and was promoted temporarily to the rank of Major. On the 17th of September 1944, Kane and B Company of the 2nd South Staffs assembled in their gliders and prepared to embark onto the assault into occupied Holland. 5 minutes into the flight, however, the tow rope connecting the towing plane to the Horsa glider snapped, and the glider landed safely on the ground, back in England. The men made their way back to the airfield and flew out to Arnhem on the second day of the operation. Upon landing, he took his men and set off to find the rest of B Company, who, at the time, were moving forward to assist the 1st Parachute Brigade. The men were involved in bloody fighting around the St. Elizabeth Hospital. The men encountered heavy German resistance and made it to a dell near the Arnhem City Museum. It was in this area that the men of B Company first encountered enemy armour. Armed with only piets, grenades and mortars, the men barely put a dent in the German tanks and eventually were forced back, but not before the tanks unleashed hell upon the lightly armed infantry. The brutal fighting had left the South Staffordshires decimated, with only around 100 men left able to fight, and with Major Robert Kane as its only senior officer. The men retreated back to Oosterbeek and dug in along the line. They joined Major Lonsdale's force along the southern part of the eastern perimeter. It was here that Kane would show incredible bravery and courage that would see him awarded the Victoria Cross. The bitter fighting that had decimated the South Staffs had a profound effect on Major Kane. He gained a distaste for enemy armour and sought to destroy as much of it as possible. If enemy tanks were reported to be nearby, he would grab the nearest piet and do his best to take it on himself. On one occasion, 2 German armoured vehicles approached Kane's position. These were believed to be a Tiger and a Stug 3. Kane waited in a trench until the Stug was close enough to engage. He fired a round at the vehicle, but failed to destroy it. The vehicle then turned its attention to Kane and fired a round into the building behind him, showering him with falling bricks and mortar. Kane, unfazed by this, continued firing at the vehicle until it was disabled. Its crew bailed out, but these were quickly gunned down by other men. Kane quickly turned and engaged the second tank. When he lowered and tried to fire his piet, however, the round exploded and the weapon blew up in his face, wounding him. Kane was dragged away, and a British 75mm gun destroyed the tank. Kane was then dragged back to the British aid station, but he refused morphine for his wounds and decided that he wasn't wounded enough to remain where he was and quickly headed back to the front line against the objections of the doctors. The following day, his eardrums burst from the constant firing. Kane once again brushed this off and continued to fight. On the 24th of September, a short truce was organised to allow both sides to evacuate their wounded and dead. On completion of this, Kane was alerted to the approach of another German tank. Kane, along with the Royal Artillery gunner, raced towards a 6-pounder anti-tank gun. The men moved it into position, fired and destroyed the German tank. The gun was shortly rendered out of action as the recoil mechanism broke. The following day, the Germans launched a huge attack on the British positions. Infantry, tanks, and flamethrowers all smashed into the battered British men, who by this point had used up most of their ammunition. Undeterred by this, Major Kane armed himself with a 2-inch mortar. He fired the mortar almost horizontally due to the close proximity of the enemy to their positions. Eventually, the German attack was driven off by the battered and exhausted airborne men. By the end of that night, Major Kane had reportedly destroyed 6 German tanks, as well as a number of other vehicles and scores of infantry. Robert Kane and what remained of his men withdrew from Oosterbeek that night. Kane shaved the beard from his face before departure and ensured every man under his command who was able to cross the river before he himself departed. When Kane arrived at British headquarters, he was greeted by Brigadier Hicks, who said, "There's one officer at least who shaved." Kane replied in classic officer fashion, "I was well brought up, sir." 5 Victoria Crosses were awarded during Operation Market Garden. Major Robert Kane was the only one to survive the battle. He also holds the distinction of being the only soldier from the Isle of Man to be awarded the Victoria Cross. Kane was awarded the honorary rank of Major after the war and was demobilized in December 1945. After the war, he returned to work with Shell. Kane had 4 children. His daughter Frances married former Top Gear presenter Jeremy Clarkson. His family were unaware that their father had been awarded the Victoria Cross, as, according to Clarkson, he forgot to mention it to them. Robert Kane died in 1974. But that concludes today's episode. Hope you all enjoyed it. Don't forget to hit like, subscribe, and drop me a comment as well. Thank you all. We'll see you on the next one. Cheery bye. We end today's story of Medal of Honour and Victoria Cross winners by heading to Anzio in Italy, where we meet a man who performed a series of incredible acts of bravery that saw him awarded the Medal of Honour. Thank you all. Enjoy. The Second World War featured thousands of stories of incredible bravery and heroism. And in today's episode, I shall be telling you one of these incredible stories. Van T. Barfoot was born in Mississippi in June of 1919. His family had been members of the Choctaw Nation. He was raised in a religious farming family, and amid growing tensions in the Pacific and Europe, Van decided to join the army, preferring to be in before a potential draft came up. He eventually found himself in the 157th Infantry Regiment, and in 1943, they found themselves in Africa. Here, they trained in amphibious warfare. When they'd finished their training, they were loaded on ships once again and sent to Italy, taking part in the invasion and subsequent liberation of Sicily, as well as landing at Salerno in mainland Italy. Here at Salerno, he won the Silver Star for destroying 3 German machine gun nests, as well as capturing 2 prisoners. When the Allies landed at Anzio, Barfoot's unit once again found themselves taking part, and on the 23rd of May 1944, his unit was sent out on patrol. The area was littered with minefields, and Barfoot's patrol came under intense German machine gun fire. Attempting to neutralise the threat, Barfoot advanced alone through the minefield. Now, he closed in within a few metres of the enemy. He threw grenades into their position and rushed it with his Thompson submachine gun. He killed the first gun crew and advanced through the German trench system. He came across a second machine gun and disabled its crew as well. He continued his advance and took out a third gun, altogether capturing 17 German prisoners. Crazily, his story of bravery wasn't over. The Germans launched a counterattack, and 3 Tiger I's advanced on the American position. Instead of retreating, Barfoot grabbed a bazooka and began engaging heavily armoured German tanks. He fired at the lead Tiger and disabled it, destroying its track. And as the crew attempted to escape towards the other tanks, he took them out before they could get away. His actions caused the other 2 tanks to halt their advance and change their course. His unit continued their advance, and Barfoot came across a German artillery gun. Rather than letting it potentially fall back into enemy hands, he destroyed it with some TNT. Insanely, his actions still weren't over. When 2 of the men in his unit became injured, Barfoot summoned what strength he had left and assisted them back to the rear, where they received medical attention. For his actions on this day, Van T. Barfoot was awarded the Medal of Honour, which is America's highest gallantry award. He was also promoted to second lieutenant from sergeant. Van survived the war and later went on to serve in Korea as well as Vietnam, where he retired at the rank of colonel. Van Barfoot passed away in March 2012, aged 92. Well, that concludes today's episode on Van Barfoot.
And that concludes the episode in general. Hope you all enjoyed that. Something a little bit different today while I work on getting another interview set up. Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to head over to the YouTube channel, hit subscribe, and start working your way through some of the content there as well. And I'll be back very soon on the podcast with a couple of episodes, which I can't wait to get into. Thank you all. Cheery bye.